we were did not need to work in the factories. And then he said, jump on the bike. And a couple Germans went ahead of us, we in between, and then five Germans behind. And we had to pedal on these cobblestones on that bike. And I tried to escape, you know, on the way. I said, I have to take a leak, I have to pee, you know. And I thought, well, you know, they go on, but no, they stay right there with you. And finally, you know, after driving about 50 miles, we stopped at an area, and then I saw it already. And that was in a big field. We had to dig holes, and then they would put poles in every hole. And these poles were about, oh, I don't know, around 15 feet long. And we had to dig holes, and then so many feet apart, something like 20 feet apart, the whole area for miles. And then they would put electric wires on these poles. And then when they were expecting an invasion from England, and the parachutists would jump out in these areas, in these fields, and then they would put the electricity on these wires, and they would all be electrocuted. And that was the job which I had to do. And I didn't want to do that, because, you know, as one in the underground, we were trying to sabotage as much as we could. So I worked there for a little while, and I was just continually thinking, how can I get away? And then the guard was changed, and I went to this other guard, and I said, I have to go to the toilet. Well, he said, do it right here. I said, no, I'm not going to do it right here. I said, I'm going down there at the ditch, and I'm going to go down in the ditch there, you know, there, and the ditch was low. And then I expected, you know, when I was there, I would. So I did that. I stood on the bank there, and I put my pants down, and then I walked down. And as soon as I was down, I pulled my pants up, and on my hands and my feet, I crawled, and I ran like, you know, farther and farther away, until I was quite a ways away. And then I went to the road, and I stopped somebody, and I said, my bike is standing there. Is there a chance you could get it for me? And lo and behold, you know, he got my bike, and he came back with it. Amazing. It was a miracle. And I took off fast, but I didn't go home. I went first to Homer's farm, and because they knew already that I was picked up, and Homer was worried, you know. And so as soon as I was there, then I went away from there, because they would go and look there too, and I went further in hiding with some other farm. And so these things, you know, happen so often with raids. And they had them on the farm where Mom lived too, where Oma lived. And that was,
you know, what happened to the other two guys who were digging holes?
They stayed there. They stayed there.
Did you ever see them in about 2 years?
Yeah. They worked there. And when the work was finished, they then went home again. And being in the underground, I couldn't work for these guys, because that would cost the lives of others. The same way, other areas of the field that they inundated that. So they would either inundate a lot of fields, or they would put these poles, and the cows could still walk in between there, you know, and put the wires, the electrical wires on there. But then, you know, all the farmers there who had a plow had to plow the fields which they were going to inundate, so that when the water came on there, it would become really muddy, and when the tanks from the English would come through there in the invasion, it would get stuck in there. And so I got summonses to that I had to come plow. And every time I had an excuse, I didn't go, you know. And the city hall was in charge to get the guys there. And I came with one excuse after the other, that we had only one horse, you needed two horses, and that we had no plow and so on. And finally, the Germans got fed up with the, you know, from what the city hall had said. And so two Germans came to our farm, and they really beat me up. They kicked me with their hard boots, you know, under my thumb, and I was blue. And he said, now you get your horses and your plow. I said, we have only one horse and we have no plow. You're lying, we'll find you a plow. So they start searching on the farm. And our horse, we had hit in the bush, in, you know, or in a dry ditch really. And we cut some trees and we stuck them in the ground, you know, that they couldn't see him. And soon they came with a kind of a thing, which was not a plow, but it was a thing to make little furrows where the water would run. It would cut like this, you know, and lift it out. I said, that's not a plow. You take that thing, got something. And so they forced me, and I said, well, I still got only one horse, you need two horses. We'll fix you. So then one jumped on his bike, and pretty soon he came in with a horse from one of the neighbors. He said, here are two horses, now get going. And there was no other way. And, I put that thing as low as I could, so that it, you know, just made a little furrow, you know. And and after the day was over, I said to, when the day was over, I went to the undercommandant of our underground, of our local area. I said, hey, there are 17 farmers plowing there. I'd like to have a guy, and we're going to take one wheel off every plow, so that none of the farmers can plow. And, but that had to be done at night, you know, in dark. But nobody could go out on the street or anywhere. As soon as the sun was down, nobody could be out on the street. Nobody. And if anybody was out in the street, they would shoot you. The German soldier would shoot anybody who was out in dark. So that was kind of dangerous, but he said, well, I'll give you the undercommandant if you go along with him. I said, that's okay. And so at night at 2 o'clock, we got out on the street and on the bike, and just watching, you know, that with no lights, and it was about 5 miles. And we came to that field with a couple of adjustable wrenches, and we took one wheel off every plow, except one that was so rusted on we couldn't get it on, and we carried them to the canal and we dumped them all in the canal on one pile, so that after the war we would know where it was. And then the next day I went back with my two horses, and
you didn't let sleep that night.
And the farmers were coming back already out to the field, said, John, they took a wheel off every plow. I said, oh, come on. That. Oh, I'm sure the underground did that. I said, I don't believe it. I'm going to have a look. I said, what? I went to have a look. Yeah, you know. I just acted as if I knew nothing about it. And then they said, well, what are we going to do now? I said, well, let's go home. Well, we can't do that, and we get it. Yeah. What are you going to do? I said, we're going to report it to the headquarters there. They had a little shack there, and they went there, and I thought, well, they go, I better go with him. And so he was standing there, and the head guy was standing there, and they were telling him what had happened. And he said, who did that? We don't know. And he just looked around that whole circle there, and he said, will you come in? He said to me, you come in. he picked me right up, boy. Right up. Because I've been resisting so long, he figured. And he threatened me, you know, he put a gun on me, he said, now you go home and you come back with another plow and every one of you guys, and I'll give you until 3 o'clock this afternoon, and if you don't, we'll set the farms on fire and we'll shoot every one of you if you don't come back. And I said to the farmers, I said, let's come back all at 3 o'clock and tell them that we cannot find another plow, every one of us. I said, he won't do it. We don't risk it. And there were two, who was one other guy, said, if you dare, I'll do it too.
What was the attitude of the farmers towards the underground? Were they afraid of the underground? Or were they sympathetic? Or were some of them against the underground?
Some were against because it was too dangerous. And it was, because whatever we did, you know, they would retaliate. And it was, our hands really were tied. And further and further during the war, you know, more and more our hands were tied.
Did you
like that? Yeah, I was in the ground. I was one of them. And that other man said, if you do it, I'll do it. So we went together back at 3 o'clock, the two of us, and we said, we can't find a plow. There is none.
And the others came back with plow?
All came back with another plow.
How many others were there?
We were with 17. 15 came back, and we were the only two. And, boy, he gave us a raking over that officer, and he threatened us. And threatened us and threatened us. And he said, you go back, he said, we mean business. And he said, before you back on the farm, he said, your farm will be on fire. And I went back, you know, with fear and trembling, and I didn't dare to go home. And I went to the principal of our school, Mr. Klarenberg, have you ever heard of his name? And I went upstairs and I told them, and I was watching them to see the fire, you know, the farm going on fire. Because I had seen, while I drove home, the motorcycle with the German officer went past me, and I saw him going in our laneway. So I thought, I'm not going home. And I stayed there for a while, and then I saw him coming off and going. And then I went home, and my father was shaking all over. They had held a revolver for his heart, and they threatened and threatened and threatened.
What did they want him to do?
Huh?
What did they want you guys to do?
Come up with a plow. And they said, we'll give you to 6 o'clock tonight, and otherwise, he said, we'll pick you up when the farm goes on fire. Well, that night, you know, we got the whole city all over on the farm begging us, please, please, please go. Because he went to the Burgomaster, you know, the mayor, and they threatened his life too, and the city hall was on fire, and so, I, the next day I went, that were some
lovely days that you were on.
I think about 3 weeks or so, 3 weeks, something like that, I don't know.
And was the field ever a site for invasion?
Yeah, that part went under water and was inundated too. There was toward the end that, you know, toward the end of the occupation, there was hardly any grass on land left. Just about everything was inundated. Just about everything. And then we had to dig the canal, dig the dikes too with shovel. Hundreds and hundreds of anybody, you know, and working there, and then they would feed you there from the from the kitchen, so-called, you know, the soup and so on. And we had to dig the whole way, throwing the shelter, making these dikes. The ammo stock for all kinds of others.
I remember one about concrete block when we built a bridge. whatever that.
Yeah. And that was, they were going to build concrete blocks on every major road. And every major road ordinarily had a canal on this side and a big creek way down below. So what he would do is they would make three big concrete blocks, real big ones, that nobody could push, you know, you need to, and he would put one on the side of the road, one on this side of the road, and with a narrow opening where just a truck could go through. And so if they want to block off that road, they just pulled with a crane or something, you know, with a trolley, they would pull that thing there in the middle, and it was blocked off. And they were going to do that just outside of our town, and they delivered a big truckload with cement to the next day to do that. And it was not just an ordinary truck, it was a transport trailer. And cement was as scarce as gold is, you know. But they unloaded that big thick thing. And as soon as we found out from the underground, we said to him, we may do something about that. And so it was decided that at night we would throw all these bags of cement in the canal, that you can use them. Then it would become hard. Soon as cement, water gets on cement, then it gets hard. And then you can do nothing with it anymore. And but, you know, they would always place a guard there, a soldier walking with his gun. There was a guard there. If anything would, you know, that nobody would touch it. So we had to find out first where there was a guard. And I was sent, you know, and I crawled again on my hands and knees, you know, and looking. And there was no one. I reported back that there was no one. And so at night, a bunch of us, no, I did not help on that because they said, you risk your life already on that one, we'll have some others. And at night, they threw all these bags of cement, their old transport trailer cement in the water. And the next day, when they came, you know, to build it, they found out. And then again, you know, the retaliation. They went to the city hall, they went to the priest's home, to the two ministers' home, and they said, unless the guys who've done that show up at 10 o'clock this morning, he said, the city hall goes up in fire, and every parsonage goes up in fire, and the doctor's house goes up in fire, and we will have you, they would shoot the mayor, and the three preachers, and the doctor. Unless we would show up.
I can see why underground is not universally popular.
So our hands were tied, you know. They didn't do it. We said they won't do it, you know. But here and there they did it.
Yeah.
But ultimately we could do nothing anymore.
Yes, because of the severity of the
battalion. The only thing what we did was...
So what happened then on that occasion? So you didn't show up and they didn't.
And they brought another load and they built it. You know, every night, these squadrons of Allied planes would fly over our house. And then the spotlights would go on, these big spotlights, you know, searching the skies, everywhere. And sometimes they got one plane in there, you know, and then the... And falling down, you know. And hit sometimes the cows, you know, and only guy, Uncle Andrew's steel brothers, piece of strap. You know, yeah, steel brothers today. And sometimes, you know, it happened that in the daytime when we were milking the cows or when we were working in the field, we always would go in the field with a big pail. We had special milk pails which was thick galvanized iron, and we always took it along, and when they started shooting and the shrapnel fell down, and we would always sit down and put the pail on our head. That's how we were sitting.
You took an extra one for the milk?
No, no, not when we were milking, and we threw the milk out and in the can, and then we put the milk pail over, but otherwise when we were regularly working in the field.
You would carry a milk pail around.
And once when we were working, you know, it was cloudy and the clouds were very low, and there was a plane going very low, and he was obviously looking for one of these anti-aircraft things which were close by, only 2-3 kilometers, not even away from us. And they began firing, you know, at random because he was close by, you know. And they hit him. And we heard him come lower and lower, and then we saw him coming out of the clouds and right, you know, over our head. And down to close to one of our neighbors, and Andrew and me. We ran home, we jumped on the bike, and we went down there. And we saw the plane there, just behind the farmer's house and barn. And the pilot was in there, and he was unconscious, and he had a hole in his head. And we got him out, we sawed him out, and we laid him on the in the house there by the farmer.
With hacksaws or something?
Yeah, yeah, something like that. I forgot, with hacks, I think. And his leg was broken everywhere, and so we was having there, and I held his hand. I still remember I held his hand, you know, because every time one bit to go with his hand in his hand, you could see his brain almost, and I held it down, you know, and sat there for a while, and then the doctor came, and he looked him over. He said, "No, don't touch him," he said, "it's a little while ago." And no sooner he had said, he came to the soldiers. And very rough, you know, they pushed me away, and I didn't want to be pushed away, I just held them. And they searched all over, and the man's leg was broken everywhere, and he had the boots on. And out of his boot was this far a map sticking out, and he saw it. And oh boy, he grabbed that boot, and he pulled that map out and started looking, you know. And the truck came there, and he said, "Throw him on the truck." And the doctor said, "No, he's not to be transported." He said, "Throw him on the truck," and he gave the doctor a push, and they threw him on the truck, and off they drove.
Did he die?
I'm sure he died on the way. Just, yeah, hatred that he came. And
he's taking quite a risk flying, so they're looking for the next
year. Simple. My friend, very close friend, who was just a year older than me.
Was he still conscious, or was he unconscious?
I think he was unconscious. I don't know.
Missed that he could speak.
He said, "Yes, I am." He didn't say, he said something. Yeah. Yeah. My friend got killed too. He got medals from the king, from Churchill. He crossed the channel during the war, and he became a pilot there. He got training in England, and he made, I think, 350 raids to England, to Germany, and he had the highest, what do you call it? What's the word? I know the Dutch word. Underscheiding, you know, for bravery.
Highest decoration.
Decoration for bravery. And then one day, his friend had to test one of the new planes, and he could not. And they asked for volunteers, and he did. And he killed himself with the test plane.
It was the first time the plane went down.
Yeah.
And there was something about it.
Yeah, I can show you the picture. When you're on the farm this summer, I'll show you the booklet. With his case of Ardenburg.
So the friend who did fly the test plane, was he afraid to fly because of the risk?
I think he had off, and he was with his wife or so, some kid. They made a deal, a private deal. They sometimes would do something for another, and he said, I'll do it this
time. Work your shift.
Yeah, something. That's, yeah.
So there was a design problem with the
Oh, yeah, and where the plane came down, and then the farmer said, where did Arendt, my hired man? And his wife said, well, when the plane was circling, he was standing right behind the barn. And we went looking for him, and the wing had hit one part of the barn, and behind the barn was a big hay mile, and the wing had cut the hay mile almost in two, and you could see an opening, and that's where we found the hired man dead. He was just a little older than I was. I had gone with him to school. He was sitting there, and
he was hit by the wing.
Hit by the wing. And
he saw it coming, he ran to the hay mile to get out of the way.
No, he was hit hiding behind the barn, and somehow, you know, that piece of wood. He was dead, and he carried him and understood. Now I won't tell no more stories. So boys, remember that the war is terrible, and that's why Opa has a gun, a war gun yet on the farm, but I never use it. I only use it when there is a bear around. And I have everywhere on the farm to sign no shooting, no trespassing. I just want the wild animals to stay there and be safe. Opa never uses a gun anymore. I hate him. Yeah, but I hate him.